Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And as I said before the break, here's what's missing to my eye from most of the coverage so far about Donald Trump's tax deduction of nearly $1 billion, as reported by the New York Times and not denied by Trump. Yes, obviously it raises questions about him, but Trump's just one guy. And according to the Times, the massive write-down and the resulting ability to pay no federal income taxes for years thereafter, despite making lots of money, was perfectly legal. The Times article says, quote, Trump took full advantage of generous tax loopholes specifically available to commercial real estate developers. And the Times says, tax rules especially advantageous to wealthy filers. And the Times says, a tax provision that is particularly prized by America's dynastic families, which, like the Trumps, hold their wealth inside Byzantine networks of partnerships, limited liability companies, and S corporations, unquote. Wow. So the story as I read it is both about Trump and about the special tax breaks for the very wealthy in the system as it's been set up, or some would say rigged.
You know, Trump represents the same rigged system that he claims he's going to change.
Clinton yesterday campaigning in Ohio, but she didn't propose any systemic fixes. Here's New York Times finance columnist James B. Stewart on Morning Edition today.
She would have to propose reforms that would close the loopholes that allow him to offset these losses against other income and to generate the losses in the first place.
As for Trump, he ironically claims that gaming the system leaves him not only a genius, but uniquely qualified to unrig it.
I've been saying from the beginning of this campaign how ridiculous, complex, and yes, unfair the tax system is. It is an unfair system. And so complex that very few people understand it. Fortunately, I understand it.
But Trump, too, no surprise, has no specific reform plans for the provisions he used. And the tax plan that he has announced would lower taxes on the very wealthy in most cases. So with us now to help us make heads or tails out of these Byzantine tax provisions, or should I say help us make heads I win, tails you lose out of them, is David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporter who specializes in economic and tax issues. He has an article explaining some of it in the Daily Beast called The Art of the Steal, and he is the author of the book, now The Making of Donald Trump. Hi, David. Thanks for helping us with this, and welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thank you for having me on again, Brian.
You write that Trump combined tax benefits under sections 1231 of the Internal Revenue Code and exception provision in section 108. And I thought, of course, how could I not have known that? So help us lay people out here. What are these two sections?
So 1231 is what are called net operating losses, and it's what's called ordinary income. So profits from a business you own directly or through an S corporation or a partnership, the wages you earn at your job, those are ordinary income, not capital income. And once you have net operating losses or NOLs, they're incredibly valuable. You can reach back 2 years to rewrite your tax returns and apply them. You can use them in the current year and you can use them into the future. Now, 1995, Donald's return shows minus $916 million, but he had net operating losses for many years before this. We're just seeing a snapshot. The last year we know he actually paid taxes, by the way, was 1977. We have no record otherwise for federal income tax.
We have no record one way or another, right?
I revealed that he didn't pay taxes in 84 because of a New York City tax trial that Donald held, and there were badges of fraud that arose in that trial on his tax return. And we know he didn't pay in a number of other years. And we know in recent years he reported an income on his tax return of less than $500,000 because he got the star property tax credit that New York homeowners like me and Donald get.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 1231 losses can be used to offset any other kind of income. Doesn't matter what it is. But to use up that amount, Trump would have to have $50 million a year of income, and his tax return showed about 20, which doesn't suggest, by the way, that he's a billionaire. And what Donald next did, though, is the part I find fascinating. Under Section 108, he took advantage of two key provisions here. Trump in 1990 got his bankers to let him pay back roughly $1 billion less than he owed. Well, as anyone who got their student loan discharged or their mortgage knows, that's taxable income. Whatever you borrowed and didn't pay back is income. Well, this is a special provision for real estate people. If you own other buildings, and Trump owned casinos in Atlantic City, you can give up the future tax benefits of those buildings up to the amount you would owe as income and have no expense. So that's clearly what Donald did. Then in 1995, the year covered by the three pages the New York Times got, he created a publicly held company, Trump Hotels and Casinos. He put these properties whose tax benefits had been basically eliminated into the company. So people who paid $35 a share for this company were getting far less valuable real estate than they probably imagined, though technically it was disclosed if you read the fine print.
You had to read fine print to know that these properties that you were buying stock into would not be depreciated as properties normally are.
Exactly right.
Giving you a tax benefit therefore more likely profits on your stock.
That's right. And that's because the institutional investors and the people who promote these stocks, they don't read the prospectuses. As somebody once told me at a bond hearing about Merv Griffin's collapsed company, when I said I'd read it, he said, yeah, well, only journalists have time to read that. He bought $15 million without reading. So what happened then is that the Trump Casino Company lost money every year. The 13 years Donald was chairman, it lost money. The stock investors who bought at 35, it eventually went to 17 cents. They were wiped out. But Donald got paid. He got $82 million from this failing company. So what Trump has managed to do is he has operating losses, and those come from companies where he didn't pay people money they were due. He walked away from all sorts of bills. He didn't pay the bankers in full, which means the investors in those bankers lost money. He then took avoided the tax he would owe for forgiven debts, converted it into reducing the future tax benefits of his casinos, put those into a publicly traded company. The investors lost their shirts. Donald got $82 million. For Donald, that's an absolutely terrific system, and it's typical of how he's done business his whole life.
And as far as we know, it was perfectly legal, which is where I really want this conversation to focus. Why are things like you just described, which the Times also referred to, didn't maybe go into such detail about some of the things that you just went into detail on, also indicated are perfectly legal. Why are these things perfectly legal?
Well, and that, of course, is the title of my book from 2004 that you had me on about what's wrong with our tax system. They're perfectly legal because of various special interests. As Donald Trump points out, rent the best Congress they can possibly get. And I am actually writing a new federal tax code. I expect my book to be out next year called The Prosperity Tax that gets rid of all of this.
This is the David K. Johnston fantasy tax code, right? You're not being hired by the federal government.
Oh, I'm financing this entirely out of my own pocket, and I hope the public embraces it, and because it would make the economy much more efficient and fair and stop all of this. But
by redistributing some income to you. I'm just kidding.
Yes, I work in the competitive marketplace and write books where I compete with other authors for sales. No question about that. The tax code is full of hundreds of provisions, and there are provisions not even in the tax code that affect your taxes. And there are regulations I've written about that take money from you and redistribute it to, for example, oil pipelines and natural gas pipelines. And some of these are so deeply buried that they've existed for like 20 years before they're discovered by people other than those taking advantage of them. And by the way, Donald doesn't know the tax code. It's his tax advisors who did this for him. I actually had lunch and gave him tax advice in 1990 when I was covering the casinos for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Uh-huh.
And I pointed out to him that he had negative income of $3.4 million in 1979 and that he could actually only had to lose a dollar or have a very small income, and he could live tax-free, and suggested how he could reorganize his finances to sell the tax benefits. And frankly, he was surprised I would know such stuff, but he couldn't follow the steps because he doesn't know this stuff. His tax advisors know this stuff.
It was actually one of the funniest parts of the Times article to me that, and, you know, in contrast to what his surrogates like Giuliani and Chris Christie were going out and saying on the Sunday morning talk shows, that Trump is a genius for being able to use the tax system legally to his advantage to this degree. Well, the original Times article that came out Saturday really indicated that he doesn't actually pay that much attention. He had this tax accountant named Mitnick.
Jack Mitnick.
Who he credited in one of his books and misspelled Mitnick's name.
Right.
And that Mitnick said when he would come in to do his taxes, unlike his father, Fred Trump, who was really into the details, Donald would be like, whatever. And he was married to Ivana.
And Ivana would ask the tough questions.
And she'd ask the questions. In the 1990s,
yeah,
I guess.
Part of the myth of Donald Trump that I'm trying to show in the making of Donald Trump, and which I wish we'd been able to title, Everything Trump Wants to Make Sure You Never Know About Him, is that he's this genius who understands all the stuff about business. What Donald Trump knows is how to do a deal where he puts up no money, he gets paid up front, so he's guaranteed income. And he can then reach into the business, as he did with his casinos, and remove cash as fast as he possibly could. And then when the business fails, other people are left in the lurch, and he then has these tax losses he can use to offset other income. And as long as he can keep making new deals, the art of the deal, he calls it, he'll keep having income coming in to support his lifestyle.
And it's why the tax code enables the rest of us to subsidize those kinds of tricks and have them be perfectly legal.
Right.
That I wonder if anybody's going to propose specific remedies to. As we talked to David K. Johnston, whose book is The Making of Donald Trump and has an article, The Art of the Steal, in Daily Beast that follows on the Times revelation about Trump's $916 million tax deduction that came out over the weekend. And listeners, if you have any questions for David K. Johnston as he helps us understand what this really is better in the tax code, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So, does this need to be reformed? Let me play a clip regarding Section 1231, which is still, I guess, the central thing here,
yes,
even though it's not the most exotic, the deduction for net operating losses that a business incurs. Here's Trump surrogate Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York, on CNN last night. Unlike other Trump surrogates, she did not claim the tax deduction was genius, and here's why.
Brilliant. I would definitely not have said genius and brilliant because it's such a widely used provision in the tax code. There's nothing genius or brilliant about it, but I would say it's an essential part of the tax code, and we shouldn't eliminate it because it encourages people to take risks.
An essential part of the tax code, and we shouldn't eliminate it because it incentivizes people to take risks. So what do you think of that defense of the net operating losses provision as a good thing? Because we want entrepreneurs in America. We want people to take risks. We want to, I guess, subsidize the losses from some of those risks because that's vital to economic growth.
Partly true is my answer to that. We absolutely want to have a system where we have corporations which limit your risk. You know, we don't want to go to Hammurabi's code where if you had a failed business, you became a slave, and so did your children and your spouse and whatnot. So we want to have people the ability to take net operating losses. But why should you be able to take your net operating losses and use them against your capital income, your interest or dividends or capital gains? Why shouldn't you only be able to use them against future businesses that you create, if that's the intention? And the other provisions that intersect with this have created all sorts of massive abuses. And by the way, New York City is ground zero for cheating on Section 1231 in real estate deals. And I've written about this for, I don't know, back to maybe 1997. I challenged Governor Cuomo to have audits of a particular area of 1231 cheating and said, I will donate $10,000 to the state of New York if you can't find $10,000 taxes due if you'll look at this. And the governor said, I didn't know what I'm talking about. Well, you know, I'll let people judge whether I know the tax code or not.
Well, another thing I don't understand from the Trump story, and maybe it's related to what you were just saying, is if this billion-dollar net operating loss was by various Trump businesses, the Atlantic City casinos, Trump Airlines, and the Plaza Hotel, the Times says, How does he get to deduct it from his personal income taxes, right, as opposed to whatever the companies might file?
Well, his companies, before he created this company I talked about earlier, the public bought stock in, mm-hmm, were his companies. They were partnerships and S corporations, and those all flow through the tax attributes, the profits and losses, to his personal tax return. But allowing you to use it to offset salary. By the way, Donald's salary was $6,001, the tax return show. Using it to offset interest income, he had about $7 million of that, or his $3.4 million of business profits. That's okay, the $3.4 million of his directly owned businesses. But I don't see any reason that you should be able to use it to offset other obligations. We're not trying to discourage you from working. We're trying to make sure people will take the risks and start businesses. And you should be able to take losses from business A and use them against B if you directly own the business. Sure. You shouldn't be able to write off all your other income.
And the original Times article calls the reasons for Trump's $915 billion loss as, quote, through mismanagement of three Atlantic City casinos, yes, plus his ill-fated foray into the airline business and his ill-timed purchase of the Plaza Hotel in Manhattan. And I'm especially interested in the first one. And you also use that term in your Daily Beast article, mismanagement of, yes, his casinos. I guess the tax code doesn't penalize you if you lost all that money through mismanagement, as opposed to just bad luck despite skillful management?
The market will punish you, but the tax code does not. When I was covering Trump, one of the things I was astonished by was that his competitors all said he didn't know the business. He didn't know the games. He didn't know the odds. He didn't know customer management. And I was totally skeptical. How could this possibly be true? And then in interviewing him, I realized it was true. He didn't know the business. And I have two chapters in The Making of Donald Trump that show he brought the biggest gambler in the world, Akio Kashiwagi, to Atlantic City twice. I watched this man gamble at the rate of $14 million an hour. Donald should have made a fortune off this guy. He lost money because he didn't understand the games and he panicked. And I explained the whole story of how he did this. The guy even scammed him for $500,000 of chips. And the Trump people didn't figure it out. I was the one who figured it out and told them.
Abdul in New Hyde Park. You're on WNYC. Thank you for calling. Hi, Abdul.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm myself a small real estate investor. I do syndicate occasionally. And when I take money from the people, the first thing I want to make sure that if the entire project makes money, we all make money. If the project loses money, we all lose money. In this case, this guy, knowingly, when you take money up front, that means you know whether it's your investors, they're making money or not money, you're the one who will be winning all the time. And then on top of that, this guy takes that losses and uses that losses to benefit him only. I mean, we don't want a precedent like that. I mean, why? We live in this country and we go around telling that we are the standard bearer, we have the morality. And then we elect this guy to our the presidency of this country.
How about the law, Abdul? Why should
the law? That's fine. The law is fine for the genuine people who have the genuine losses. I don't see the problem with the losses, but we have to have something, a reform in the law, so that people like him, a scumbag like him, a cheat like him, cannot take advantage of it.
Abdul, thank you very much for calling in. So Abdul said he's a real estate investor,
right,
and so the rest of his comment flowed from there. The Times article says Trump took full advantage of generous tax loopholes specifically available to commercial real estate developers.
Real estate is the best business in the world if you want to avoid taxes. It is full of these subsidies, and I wrote a column in March for the USA Today showing that Donald Trump literally, if he does what he says, profits off the system, and I can explain to you if you want. If you're a full-time real estate professional, and that's Donald, 15 hours a week, you can take unlimited losses from your real estate, from depreciating your real estate, paper losses, and use them to offset your other income. So let's assume he really made $65 million in 2011 from The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. NBC says that's ridiculous, and it is, but let's assume. That was his claim. He would have owed $23 million of federal income tax. But because of the real estate rules, if he could depreciate more than $23 million, he would pay zero. What the government is then doing is giving him a zero interest loan of $23 million. And, you want to borrow all the money you can at zero interest. So let's go forward 20 years, the normal course of a real estate deal, and assume Donald made 10% net a year because he's Donald. He says he's a great investor. At the end of the 20 years, he would give the government the $23 million, and he would pocket after tax $130 million. The tax system for real estate people is a source of wealth, and it can be a source of wealth bigger than the real estate itself. And it's not limited to those guys. Hedge fund managers, private equity managers, some others have special deals just like this.
But why in the case of real estate developers? It's as if people won't put up luxury apartment complexes like Trump is associated with, or try to build casinos, which are supposed to be licenses to print money, even though they weren't in these cases, or buy a luxury hotel like the Plaza. Why do we need to subsidize real estate developers to do that with tax breaks if they don't make money on them, or, you know, other kinds of tax breaks that real estate developers get? I don't understand.
We don't need to, and it's one of the reasons our economy's not performing so well. We're subsidizing real estate of all kinds, including grants and loans. Trump got $400 million of welfare for the Grand Hyatt, which only cost about $100 million, and it was all borrowed money. He didn't have a penny in the deal. And what's happening, therefore, is we're putting money into unproductive assets. When people invest in Old Master or other paintings, when they put up luxury housing that's vacant all year round, as we have all throughout New York City, and when you can own a $20 million apartment and have an annual property tax bill under Section 421A of less than $2,000, what we're doing is taking money that should be at work in productive ways that creates jobs, that builds wealth, that advances the economy, and instead we're putting it into these unproductive assets. And that's one of the key reasons we need a whole new federal tax code.
Suzanne on Staten Island. You're on WNYC with David K. Johnston. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, good morning. I've heard of this problem every 4 years, so for I don't know how many elections, and nobody points out that in order to reform the tax code, it's not the presidential candidate you have to worry about so much. It's the congressional people, and that the voter has to be cognizant of that and be responsible about informing themselves with the congressional candidates in their districts and vote accordingly if they want reform. Stop talking about the presidential candidates. Talk about the people in Congress who are the ones who make this decision. They're the ones responsible.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
The only ones that can change it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, we all talk about the president or the IRS. The IRS is just the tax police. They just enforce the law. They're instead of the street cops, the NYPD, they're the tax police. And Congress, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, Congress makes taxes. We created the Constitution specifically to tax ourselves, and Congress has the power. And if people need to focus on Congress, 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 I agree totally, and I wish my peers in the news media would do that.
Although Thomas Jefferson wasn't so in favor of those taxes as Alexander Hamilton was,
yes,
if the play is any indication.
Well, because Alexander Hamilton understood business and growth and getting ahead if you were a poor boy, and Jefferson was someone who came from agriculture and thought we should be an agrarian country so we would be egalitarian, overlooking little things like slavery.
Yeah. So let me go back to the clips of Clinton and Trump, who claim to want to do something about these things. Here's Clinton.
You know, Trump represents the same rigged system that he claims he's going to change.
So that was in reaction to the Times story. Trump himself.
I've been saying from the beginning of this campaign how ridiculous, complex, and yes, unfair the tax system is. It is an unfair system, and so complex that very few people understand it. Fortunately, I understand it.
So what are they putting on the table?
Well, Trump's tax plan is George Bush on steroids, much bigger tax cuts for very wealthy people. He would give a tax break, an unlimited tax break, to someone who has three nannies and flies their children around in first class to their various mansions. That's his idea of child care or relief. He's cut back on the benefits for working people. He originally said $25,000 per person of earnings with no income tax. Now he's saying $15,000. It's just all a fantasy, and it would create enormous deficits. Hillary Clinton's plans are very modest. And understand something. We can't fix the tax code we have because the economy's changed. America has a great federal tax code for 1960. And we don't live in an industrial world anymore, and we have to change our tax system.
And neither of them are proposing, and Trump suggested in his appearances after this came out, that, yeah, I did this because it was legal and I have a fiduciary responsibility to myself and when there are stockholders, to pay as little federal tax as the law allows. There's probably something to that.
But I don't have any issue with that. Learned Hand famously said, you know, you have no duty, not even a patriotic duty, to pay more than the law requires. But the other side of that is the tax code then shouldn't have all these provisions
right.
that let people game it.
And so he suggests that he agrees with that by the end of that statement. But what's he putting up with respect to these particular things that have now been revealed?
Well, nothing. He has not proposed anything that would undo the benefits he has. And understand something about Donald Trump. I mentioned earlier we have badges of fraud in his 1984 tax return. We know he participated in sales tax fraud, and my book, The Making of Donald Trump, details that. Donald has a long history of using two sets of numbers to argue he's wealthy when he's talking to the bankers or the public, but he's impoverished when he speaks to the tax man. And so this is all what Donald Trump does. He sells you something that will get him what he wants. And right now what he wants is the biggest prize in the world, the biggest win. He wants to be elected president of the United States. He doesn't want to do the duty and the work. He's had 30 years to prepare, and he doesn't even know what the Constitution says the job is. But he wants that win.
Here's a part of it that I don't understand still, and neither does Michael in Queens. Michael, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Good morning.
Just a simple question. This concept of taking money out of the business while bankrupting it at the same time, can you explain that further? Because if you recall, Mitt Romney was also accused of that 4 years ago.
Well, if you're in control of a company, you can do all sorts of things. If you are Donald Trump before he had a publicly traded company, it's his company. He can reach in and take any amount of money he wants unless there's some bank loan covenant that would bar that.
But if there is a bankruptcy, say, and he's getting out of paying all kinds of contractors.
Right.
And
how does he get more money?
Workers. Yes. How does he at the same time take out?
The way he gets it is real simple, Brian. His lawyers say, if you don't give me what I want, I will tie you up in litigation for years. And the fact that he was involved in an 18-year fight to not pay illegal immigrants $4 an hour for tearing down Bonwit Teller by hand tells these people that Donald will tie people up in court forever. There's a Benjamin Moore paint dealer who's due $34,000, the final payment on paint for redoing the Doral Country Club in Miami. And Donald wouldn't pay him. He spent $300,000 in legal fees and was getting nowhere until Donald's witness was asked, well, why don't you just pay this bill? The contract says you owe the money. And the answer was, Mr. Trump feels he's paid enough. So the judge gave a foreclosure order, and Trump continues not to pay and continues to fight the guy. It's just his nature to not pay people what he owes them under contracts he signed.
So the banks are likely to let him out of a lot of stuff rather than have to put up with years
and
years
put money in his pocket.
Of litigation.
Yes, and put money in his pocket so that he will back off.
But what was that about stiffing what you called illegal immigrants?
Well, Bonwit Teller was taken down by between 150 and 200 illegal immigrants. They were Polish workers known as the Polish Brigade. They had no hard hats. They had no safety gloves or goggles or heavy equipment. They did it with sledgehammers. They were so impoverished, they were living in the building in the middle of winter here in New York. And they weren't paid properly. They had to threaten to hang Donald Trump's overseer. And Trump testified under oath that he was unaware of this. And the federal judge, after a trial, pointed out that he had a window across the street where he could see this. He went to the scene. And he said it was easy to identify the Polish brigade. They were the only people on the site without hard hats. And at the end of the day, Trump settled.
So there were safety violations.
Oh, yeah.
Their lives were being put at risk.
But no inspections that we know of. And at the end of the day, Trump made a settlement to give them some of the money, but he had it sealed. Anybody who will fight over not paying people $4 an hour, when we're talking millions and hundreds of millions, the bankers are intimidated by that.
So there's also in that story the fact that Donald Trump was knowingly and willingly and apparently enthusiastically hiring people here illegally.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the great contradictions. There are many of them in his life, Brian.
And you said they were taking down the walls of
the
Bonwit
Teller building, yes. And they destroyed the beautiful bas-reliefs on the front that he promised to the Metropolitan Museum and the grill work that's like a brooch on a building, a piece of jewelry. And Trump used a fake character. He posed as his own PR man, John Barron, and deceived even the New York Times, because people didn't know his voice back then, about what he had done.
So he knows how to unbuild a wall.
Yes.
last thing. The Times article refers to a tax provision that is particularly prized by America's dynastic families, which, like the Trumps, hold their wealth inside Byzantine networks of partnerships, limited liability companies, and S corporations, in explaining how Trump got this $916 million deduction. Is there anything there we haven't talked about yet? What is this tax rule especially advantageous to dynastic families?
If you got 20 minutes, I'll walk you through it. But the tax code is full of these rules. In theory, you can only pass to your heirs $5.4 million per person before taxes. I was just at a conference with tax lawyers.
That's the usual estate tax debate.
That's right. And I was just at a conference with lawyers who were saying, oh, I can pass $1 billion now if I got 10 years real easily. There are so many of these rules that allow people who are really wealthy and are well-advised to not pay or pay very little in tax. And it's hard for a lot of people who are prominent or wealthy to understand that, to recognize you got to get your income up to above $10 million and all these goodies start to come into place. If you are wealthy enough, you just borrow against your assets and you don't pay taxes because you don't have any income. You're borrowing from yourself.
David K. Johnston, investigative journalist specializing in taxes and the economy, and the author of the new book, The Making of Donald Trump. Thank you so much.
Thank you.